And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday as we help you get ready for Thanksgiving, with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, the latest college football playoff rankings are out. What are the paths for the different contenders moving forward? Plus, James Franklin signing that extension for Penn State. What does it mean for the rest of college football? We'll get ready for a big day in the NFL tomorrow. I've been complaining about some of the quarterbacks, some of the matchups for tomorrow's slate. Well, coming up, I'm going to do a complete 180. I'm going to sell you on those games. You don't want to hang out with your uncle. You're annoyed by your cousins. You need a reason to watch those football games tomorrow. I'll sell them for you later on this afternoon. Plus, in the NFL, it has been such a topsy-turvy season, but should we be surprised? Should we be surprised with how the standings currently are? Get to that later on. Start to preview Clemson and South Carolina. Of course, my Thanksgiving food takes have been under a microscope, catching some heat, pun intended, for some of the Thanksgiving food takes. Share it on the Morrow Midday Show. And we'll talk some golf coming up later on this hour with Jeremy Schilling. Paul Charchian will join us next hour to talk fantasy football and get you set up for the weekend. It's always difficult when you have all these games early. You got to make some decisions with six teams playing tomorrow. So Charch will join us next hour and talk fantasy football. Usually joins us on Thursdays. Of course, tomorrow we won't be here. So he's joining us today to help you get set for the football weekend. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio, at kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or just head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com. And there you can click on our show page and leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, leading into Thanksgiving. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, this Thanksgiving Eve is going quite well so far. About you?
Yeah, not too bad. You know, Wednesday was always the day that the day before Thanksgiving, for whatever reason, that was the big night out in the town. So if you're going out tonight, or if the family's coming into town and you're going out with the family, right, have fun, be safe. This is usually when the holiday begins today. We'll be here on Friday. Hopefully you have Friday off. So, that's the nice thing about Thanksgiving. It's really like a five-day extravaganza beginning today. You have family coming in or you're traveling. You go out to the bars tonight. And then you got plenty of great football over the weekend. Good food tomorrow. Black Friday deals on Friday. You spend all weekend just watching football and recuperating. A nice couple of days. Let me start with this. The college football playoff rankings were released last night. And no real surprise, it went exactly as I thought it should. I would put Ohio State ahead of Alabama. Alabama does have more top 25 victories, but Ohio State in the second half of the year has seemed more controlling in their matchups than Alabama has. Alabama, the number I keep referring to, they've played 3 one-score games against teams that are a combined 7-15 in the SEC. Not great. They lost to Texas A&M, of course, when they were unranked, and then they've played close games to teams like LSU and just recently Arkansas and even Florida earlier in the year, which has turned into a train wreck. Alabama has not been as dominant as they usually are. Ohio State, meanwhile, just blew out the number 7 team in the country, beat them 49-0. Ohio State is starting to win by larger margins than Alabama has. At this point, I thought Ohio State should be number two ahead of Alabama. Cincinnati should be number four, as they are. I was a little worried that the committee would try to do whatever they could to try to keep Cincinnati out, but they put them at number four, Michigan number five, Notre Dame six. I have no complaints with any of the order. Oklahoma State seven, Oklahoma eight, or at least they're all in the top ten. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, those may be the wrong numbers. But they're in the top ten. Those are the eight teams to keep an eye on that still have a chance to make the playoff. And I thought the committee, for once we come in today, there's really nothing to bicker about. I thought they nailed it perfectly. Because it goes back to something I was saying yesterday, that this all sorts itself out, at least for this year. Georgia and Alabama are going to play each other anyways. Ohio State and Michigan are going to play each other. Notre Dame and Cincinnati already played each other. Michigan State took care of themselves by losing this past week. Oregon crossed themselves off. The ACC have crossed themselves off throughout the year. We're going to see Oklahoma and Oklahoma State this weekend. That'll take care of itself. So for as much as we complain about the committee, we don't really need a whole lot from the committee this year, because the playoffs have already begun in the regular season with these teams battling one another. Now, a few takeaways and also the paths. Let's look at the paths for these teams first. For Georgia, it's clear, right? You win the rest of the way, you're the number one seed. What's interesting for Georgia is that if they lose to Alabama in the SEC title game, how quickly things can change. We look at Georgia and we assume they're just going to be the number one team. They're going to finish undefeated. They're the team to beat. And they are currently. But if they lose to Alabama in the SEC title game, now suddenly they're not undefeated. They're not conference champions. And they're probably dropping down to, probably number three. And you would have to face, as of today, an Ohio State or maybe an Alabama in the first round. There's a big difference between the one seed and two or three. Right now, if you're the one seed, if the season ended today, you're taking on Cincinnati. And say what you want about Cincinnati, I don't think they can compete with the SEC or with a team like Georgia. But if you lose a game and you fall to two or three, you have to take on either an Ohio State or probably an Alabama, somebody like that, in the first round of the playoff. And then you'd probably have to play the other team in the national championship. And in this hypothetical, it could be Alabama, who you had already lost to. And you'd have to try to face them a second time. So for Georgia, they've been coasting. You know, they've been beating their teams in their conference all by at least 17 points. But everything could change with one loss in the SEC title game. Then you look at Georgia differently. There's a big difference between being undefeated, winning the SEC, being the number one seed, and suddenly being 12-1, not winning the SEC, being a 2 or 3. That's a big difference for Georgia. But the path for them is clear. Right? You win out the rest of the way, you're the number one team, and as long as you only lose in the SEC championship and not this weekend, you're in the playoff anyways. In the top three spots as well. For Ohio State, you win out and you're in. Same goes for Michigan. They're in the same boat. If they win out, they'll be in from the Big Ten. For Alabama, if you win out, you're in. If Alabama loses a close game in the SEC title game, you could have a strong debate about a two-loss Alabama going to the playoff anyways, with close losses to A&M and Georgia, both away from home. But I just don't think there'll be a two-loss team into the playoff if a two-loss team that doesn't win the conference, as long as the other teams hold up their end of the bargain. Cincinnati at this point is the number four team. You would assume if they win out, they're in. They also have the benefit of a conference championship as well. They play a ranked team next weekend. They play ECU on Friday, who's having a good year. So Cincinnati can strengthen their schedule in these last couple of weeks. And then you get to Notre Dame, who's going to need a little bit of help. Right? For Notre Dame, you need the Big 12 to miss out. You need maybe Cincinnati to lose. For Cincinnati themselves, they could use an Alabama loss as well. And then you'd be looking at the SEC champion, the Big Ten champion, maybe a Big 12 champion, and Cincinnati. Right? Cincinnati needs Alabama to get out of there and does not need a conference to steal two of the four bids. Notre Dame then would need Cincinnati to lose. Oklahoma State, if they win out, they're most likely in. Some of the paths for the playoff. I always rely on Dave Bartu, who we have on the show. You can find him on Twitter at CFB Matrix. He does a great job in predicting all of this stuff. And he says that he believes if Oklahoma State wins out, they're in as the 2 or 3 spot. He believes if Oklahoma wins out, they may not even automatically get put in. And he said if it comes down to a 2-loss Alabama and a 0-loss Cincinnati, right, that would be the debate. It would come down to those two for that fourth spot. And he believes Cincinnati would get in, but cautions that being a Group of 5 team is like having an additional loss. So if Alabama has two losses and Cincinnati has zero, you might as well give them one for being a Group of Five team, but he still believes it would be enough for them to get in. And in the Big 12, when it comes to Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, they may have to face each other each of the next 2 weeks if Oklahoma wins this weekend. And it's hard to beat a team twice, but that would be the path for Oklahoma. You're going to have to beat Oklahoma State this weekend, and then you have to beat them again next weekend in the conference championship to try to punch your ticket to the college football playoff. A couple of takeaways from what we saw, though, with these rankings. Number one, I already told you about Georgia. Things can change for them in a New York minute, right? You lose in the SEC title game, your season, your outlook looks very different. And for Notre Dame and the ACC, Notre Dame and the ACC come out as losers in this for not teaming up once again. If Notre Dame had the chance to go play in a conference championship, that would be a big boost for them. Right now, they're on the outside looking in. And it may come down to a matchup between them and Cincinnati for a final spot in the playoff. Well, Cincinnati has already beaten Notre Dame, and Cincinnati will also have the advantage of being a conference champion, which Notre Dame cannot do. And that's a big thing for the committee. Not only that, but you also look at the recency bias, where Notre Dame will be off next weekend, and Cincinnati will be playing a ranked Houston team in the conference championship. And so the last impression, right, will be you won't even see Notre Dame play, and you'll watch Cincinnati, they hope, run up the score against a ranked Houston team to win a conference championship. So that's a big difference, right? It's a double whammy, Cincinnati against Notre Dame. Notre Dame could benefit from being in a conference with a conference championship, just like the ACC could benefit from having Notre Dame this year, because otherwise they're going to be now be shut out of the playoff. That's why I go back to a year ago when you had the opportunity with the pandemic, when Notre Dame finally needed you. And now, again, this year, could use the ACC. And that was the chance for the ACC to play some hardball and keep Notre Dame in the conference. Now, will Notre Dame come around to this idea of joining a conference? Probably not. And you could have an interesting debate for Notre Dame about what's better, being in the ACC and having maybe that easier path to the playoff, or being able to control their schedule. Look, Notre Dame has had five straight years now in which they've won 10 games or more. It's been an impressive run for Brian Kelly. And when they get to the playoff, we see they can't compete for a national championship anyways. So if you're Notre Dame, it's an interesting debate. Do you wish to have the freedom that allows you to put together good seasons like this, even if it could keep you from competing for a national championship? Or would you rather join a conference where you have a clearer path to a national championship in which, seemingly, you can't compete for anyways? And for Notre Dame, the goal should always be for all these teams to win a championship, but we've seen Notre Dame go up against these bigger programs in the playoff. Maybe this is the best path for them. It gives them more control, theoretically more money. They put together these good seasons, and even if they can't go win a national championship, it's like, well, I mean, we've had that opportunity, and we couldn't really compete then anyways. I'm sure Brian Kelly wouldn't have that philosophy, but some of the decision makers at Notre Dame probably look at it and see like, well, we can make more money, you know, have more control. Find a way to get to 10 wins anyways without being in the ACC. Sure, it makes it harder to win a national championship, but we can't win a national championship anyways. We keep getting blown out in those games. Some of the administrators may prefer this path anyways. But for Notre Dame to have a better chance to make it to the playoff, it's clear they could use the ACC, and right now the ACC could use them. And the other takeaway, as mentioned again, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. Oklahoma, if you want to get into the playoff, you're going to have to try to find a way to beat them back-to-back weeks, which is very difficult. We see it a lot in the NFL. Teams match up in Week 17 and then the first week of the playoffs. And usually the team that wins Week 17 does not win in the playoffs. Two examples that jump into mind, it happened with the Jets and the Bengals about a decade ago. It happened with the Vikings and the Packers in 2012. The team that wins that final regular season game to lead to the postseason matchup usually then loses the second time around. It's hard in football to beat a team back-to-back weeks. That's what's on tap, or that's the requirement for Oklahoma. Here was Kirk Herbstreit last night after the rankings were delivered. And, of course, the attention is always on Cincinnati. Here was Herbstreit on ESPN last night as he was reacting to Cincinnati. They were number four, so you would think that Cincinnati being in the top four, as long as they win out, they're good. But there is this fear that they could still be jumped by the Big 12 champion, right, a one-loss Big 12 team, or they could still be jumped by Notre Dame, even though Cincinnati beat Notre Dame and Cincinnati has a better record. Or if Alabama wins, right, you go back to the Big 12 and you have a Big 10 champion, a Big 12 champion, an SEC champion, and Alabama takes up that final spot instead of Cincinnati. Here was Herbstreit last night.
Biggest thing that we've learned tonight is that Cincinnati, with two games left, and especially next week with Houston, we just talked about how Houston is is gaining momentum and playing with confidence in a dangerous team. I think the committee will really respect that game if Cincinnati is able to win it. I think Cincinnati is in a really good spot to win their next two, regardless of what happens around them, and I think they'll be in. You know, I think it's just debatable about whether they get up to three or if they stay at four, no matter what happens. So that's big that they're at four now. I thought maybe you might see them have to continue to wait until they beat Houston in the final week of the year if they do win that game. But, David, I think this is great news for Luke Fickell and the Bearcats. Now they just got to hold serve, and they got to keep winning games.
Herb Street last night talking about Cincinnati. If Cincy wins out, you would think they're in. But you'd also have to be worried that even if they're undefeated, maybe they get jumped by a one-loss Big 12 champion like Oklahoma State. I go back to what Dave Bartu said. Being a group of five is like adding an extra loss. So even if they're undefeated, it'd really be like, right, the committee would look at them as having a one, you know, having one loss in a Power Five, much like Oklahoma State. And then you're getting into the weeds debating an AAC champion versus a Big 12 champion, and I think the committee would be more partial to the Power Five conference. If you're Cincinnati, you're in a good spot, but you can't get too comfortable just yet. For those other teams looking on the outside looking in, right, Michigan, you win out the rest of the way, you're in. Oklahoma State, you win out, I would imagine you're in. Oklahoma, you win out, you at least give yourself a chance. I would argue they probably should be in as a one-loss Big 12 champion, but the thought is that the committee's down on them. And for Notre Dame has made a really strong case for why they are one of the four best teams in football this year. It just makes it difficult not having that conference championship, being an independent, not being tied to some sort of conference, and also the fact that they'll be battling with Cincinnati for that final spot, and they already lost to Cincinnati. Notre Dame probably needs a little help to try to sneak in. When we come back, James Franklin got a big contract extension yesterday. What it means for the state of college football this offseason and moving forward. I'll let you know. We're getting ready for Thanksgiving. We'll have some Thanksgiving-themed music throughout the afternoon. But also, today is the anniversary of a couple of passings from legends in the music world.
That's right. It was 30 years ago today. We lost Freddie Mercury, the lead singer of Queen, and also Eric Carr, the drummer at the time of Kiss.
How about that? Same day.
Same day, yes.
It wasn't the same year, was it?
Yes, it was.
Really?
Very same day. Yeah,
wow.
30 years ago today.
How about that? That's a tough day for music, for the music world. So we will have all sorts of themed music, one of the staples of the Morrow Midday Show, throughout the afternoon as we get ready for Thanksgiving. And also remember a couple of rock legends who passed away on this day 30 years ago. Coming up, we'll get to James Franklin, his extension, and what it means for college football. It's the Morrow Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. Turkey, I love you. Love to eat turkey, cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should, cause it's turkey to eat. So good. That clapping's messing my head up, man. I appreciate it.
Coming up. As we get ready for Thanksgiving,
all I hear is clapping.
James Franklin signed a new contract extension yesterday with Penn State. What it means for this offseason and moving forward in college football. Here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio.
Turkey for you. Let's eat the turkey in my big brown shoe.
We've played many Adam Sandler songs at the various holidays over the years in the Morrow Midday Show. And I've always shared that my brothers and I used to love his old comedy CDs back when that was a thing. And we used to, you know, download them online or you'd buy them. But growing up, it was all about the Adam Sandler songs. And this is another classic one for Thanksgiving. Now he makes silly kid movies for Netflix. All right, so James Franklin signed that contract extension yesterday with Penn State. It was a 10-year deal, over $7 million a year, keeping him there. This is the opportunity for these coaches. Right, James Franklin, his name was being brought up. He never publicly said no to certain jobs like USC. In fact, we played that one clip when he met with reporters after practice that was a little awkward. And he'd say, you know, oh, I'd love to one day grab a beer and explain to you guys how it works. And I think that now we know, kind of alluding to maybe this, that it was all like a leverage play for James Franklin. Much like, apparently, Mel Tucker at Michigan State. Right, for these coaches, or really their agents, you love when their names are being thrown around for other jobs, because then it's a way to get you more money. So Mel Tucker gets this big contract after one good year based off of the transfer portal. James Franklin really hasn't been all that great the last couple of years. He gets a huge contract because Penn State doesn't want to lose him. Now, what does this deal mean? Couple of takes, one for the present and one for the future. Right now, this offseason, well, Mel Tucker, his name was rumored for LSU. It looks like he's going to stay at Michigan State, assuming he signs that contract. I don't know why he wouldn't. James Franklin was believed to be the front runner for USC. Looks like he's now staying put. If we even take, like, say, Jimbo Fisher at his word, then you wouldn't expect him to go anywhere. We have a lot of big-time job openings. We've been talking about this the last couple of weeks. It could be one of the crazier coaching carousels in terms of the big-time jobs available in college football. Problem is, I don't know if the candidates are going to match the openings. Now, for some of these candidates, we may not know until they become head coaches. You never saw what Dabo has accomplished at Clemson coming. And, of course, that was an interim. But my point being, right, when he was put into that position and then promoted to the full-time head coach, you could go back and read all the articles at the time. You know him by now if you're a Clemson fan. Right? Nobody liked the move. Nobody saw this success coming. So there is always that aspect that we don't know. Billy Napier may be the next Nick Saban. We have no idea. We don't know. As some of these coordinators, Dan Lanning at Georgia, maybe he'll be the next Kirby Smart. Who knows? We have no idea if a guy's never done it before. But it's what I said about Dan Mullen and a lot of these other coaches, right? If you're going to fire a coach who's had success, is it worth it to move on from them to go kind of take a risk, take a gamble with somebody that you don't know how good they're going to be? You're just hopeful. Is it worth it to move on from your coach to go get a Billy Napier? Is that exciting enough for the fan base, for the decision makers, for the future of the program? So much like this country right now, right? A lot of job openings, it's a employees market in the sense that, I mean, you got plenty of options. You could try to get more money now than ever before. Companies are desperate. Could be similar in college football that we're going to have these great openings. I don't know if we're going to have the big names to fill them. People will say Urban Meyer, Bob Stoops, they're not coming back to coach college football. Obviously, no James Franklin. It looks like no Mel Tucker at this point. All right, what are the big names that we are going to see fill these holes? Rumors about, maybe Lane Kiffin goes to Miami. That'd be a big move. But then Ole Miss opens up. Where are you going there? I don't know if the names will match the openings, at least on paper. And what we've seen is the big-time names, James Franklin, Mel Tucker, really just use this stuff as leverage plays. Not really consider going to those other schools. Instead, just using those rumors to get bigger contracts. Now, what this means moving forward, the Big Ten now has more coaches in the top 20 of highest-paid coaches, more than the SEC. Now, the SEC, that could change. We'll see who they hire at Florida and LSU. They obviously just fired those two coaches who were two of the top three highest-paid coaches in the SEC. After Saban, Ed O and Dan Mullen were some of the highest paid coaches. So the numbers are a little skewed. The SEC just fired two of their top three coaches. The Big Ten just extended now two of their top three highest paid coaches. So for the moment, this offseason, the Big Ten's investing more in their coaching right now than the SEC is. And the Big Ten has more of the top 20 paid coaches. But this goes back to the idea of why Oklahoma and Texas would want to join the SEC and vice versa. Because even though the SEC is the number one conference, the conference that does the best is the one that has the most TV viewers, the Big Ten, and the money that they bring in. And they throw that money around. If you look at the amount of money made by coaches in each conference, it's not hard to figure out why certain conferences are successful. The Big Ten and the SEC spend the most. They are the two best conferences. The Pac-12 spends the least by a wide margin. The Pac-12 has been largely irrelevant for the past decade, if not more. Right above them is the ACC. The ACC spends the second lowest amount of money on coaches in college football for the Power 5 conferences. And again, outside of Clemson, they're much like the Pac-12, really pretty much irrelevant since Florida State's heydays going back about 7 years. The conferences that spend the most have the most success. In the group of five, the AAC spends more than twice as much money on average than any other group of five conference. And the ACC is where Cincinnati at least currently is, and they're the one group of five team that you actually pay attention to. Luke Fickell has a nice salary. So you have to spend money to make money. You have to spend money to be successful. And the Big Ten is really ramping it up. We're seeing the commitment they're making. The SEC, meanwhile, just fired two of their top three highest-paid coaches, and they have five coaches hired in the last 2 years who are the five lowest-paid coaches in the SEC. And if you take the coaches hired the last 2 years by the SEC, compare those average salaries to the coaches hired by the Big Ten the last 2 years, Big Ten coaches, new hires, are making more money on average than new hires in the SEC. All this is to say, right now, the Big Ten is spending more on their football coaches. So for the SEC, you bring in Oklahoma, you bring in Texas, you bring in a way to make even more money, therefore keeping pace with the Big Ten by having more money to spend on your coaches. If Florida hires Billy Napier, I don't think he's going to get the contract that Dan Mullen had. LSU, it depends who they sign. We have reports that they're throwing, you know, the bank at Lincoln Riley. But maybe they hire somebody who also, you know, they don't have to pay too much because he's a new first-time coach in the SEC or the Power Five. The Big Ten throwing some money around right now. So they're spending more money on their coaches at the moment than any other conference. They also, by the way, keep their coaches around longer, right? James Franklin, Harbaugh, you want Harbaugh fired, he's not going anywhere. James Franklin, people want him fired, he's not going anywhere. Pat Fitzgerald has been there for 15 years. Kirk Ferentz has been there for over 20 years. You have coaches there for a long time, making a lot of money. The Big Ten, they invest into their coaches more than any other conference. So for the SEC, you want to bring in Oklahoma and Texas as a way to make more money, to invest more money. And if you're Oklahoma and Texas, you look around and say, we got to get out of the Big 12. We need that SEC money. Now, look, they pay their coaches just fine, Lincoln Riley and Sarkisian. But also the assistant coaches, more money on resources, on facilities, on recruiting. And if you go into the SEC, you can make more of that money to continue to spend and try to keep up with the programs of the SEC and the Big 10. Right now, the Big 12 lagging behind those two conferences, not only in terms of finances, but also on the field. Big 10 and the SEC have been the two best conferences. They're spending the most. That's why you want to be a part of those conferences, to have that money to be able to spend the most, because those who spend the most usually are the most successful. And right now, by the way, as mentioned, the Big 10 spending more. They're investing more into their coaches than the SEC currently is. And they showed that yesterday and last week with these contracts to Mel Tucker and James Franklin. You can understand why the other teams want to be part of these bigger conferences to try to keep up. We'll talk golf with Jeremy Schilling when we come back. It's the Tomorrow Midday Show. Oh, by the way, because, you know, we have Brooks and Bryson, right? Thanksgiving week, you're thinking golf. We got the Brooks-Bryson match coming up on Black Friday. So we got to get ready for that coming up with Jeremy. We'll also continue to play music relating to Queen, Kiss, and also Thanksgiving throughout the afternoon. This is Kiss.
Yes, it is. Very distinctive drumming from Eric Carr.
Yes, who passed away on this day 30 years ago, unfortunately. We'll get ready for Bryson versus Brooks with Jeremy Schilling when we come back. Tomorrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, we'll get ready for the match number five, Brooks and Bryson, coming up this holiday weekend with our resident golf expert Jeremy Schilling here in just a few moments on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If this doesn't get you pumped up for some golf and the holiday and the turkey you'll be eating. I don't know what will on a Wednesday afternoon. Now, we're supposed to be playing Thanksgiving theme songs. So what is the whole connection here for this song and Thanksgiving?
Okay.
Uh-huh. I'm waiting to hear. I can't wait to hear.
Who enters the field to this song?
Who?
Virginia Tech.
Uh-huh.
What is their nickname?
The Hokies.
And Hokies are?
Turkeys.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll allow it. We were just talking last segment about some of the openings in college football. Of course, Virginia Tech has one. But as I was saying, I don't think the names will match the opportunities in college football this offseason. That's why you got to be careful when you move on from a coach who's been successful. You got to make sure there's somebody out there that's worth bringing in instead of sometimes making a change just for the sake of change. Because the grass isn't always greener on the other side. We'll get more into that coming up. But as mentioned, we of course have Brooks and Bryson coming up here this weekend and a lot else going on in the world of golf as well. So we catch up every Wednesday with our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, on Twitter at @jschill. He writes for PGA Magazine, and he's with us now. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
I am well, and what this intro has done, Luke, is make me miss the one, the only, Mariano Rivera.
Of course. Absolutely. Synonymous with that song. And one of the great intros for a baseball, probably the best intro for a baseball reliever coming out of the bullpen. Enter Sandman for the Yankees. And I don't miss him. Getting to the golf world, we've talked about this a lot when you join us each week. You know, it seems like since the start of the pandemic, we've had a bunch of firsts. We've had a bunch of unique winners, and it continued when we had a first victory on the PGA Tour this past weekend at Sea Island. What were your takeaways from this past weekend?
Taylor Gooch winning the RSM Classic. He had been building towards this all offseason, all fall portion, and finally put it together. And when you are second in strokes gained approach to the green, sixth in putting, second in short game, and you shoot a bogey-free 64 on Sunday, things are going to go well. And he got a three-shot lead over Sebastian Munoz. And four over Sebastian Munoz, three over Mackenzie Hughes. But what was most impressive, Luke, is he shot 65-67 on Friday, Saturday, which were the two windiest days they had in Sea Island. Taylor Gooch is from Oklahoma. He went to Oklahoma State. We've talked about Matt Wolf. We've talked about Victor Hovland. Not talked about Taylor Gooch. He wants to be in that conversation for the best Oklahoma State golfer alum on the PGA Tour. And those guys in Oklahoma play and practice under a lot of wind. This was tailor-made, no pun intended, for him. And he gets that first PGA Tour win in the final event of the fall season. He also gets to spend 6 weeks atop the FedEx Cup point standings because he moved to number one in that department as well.
Yeah, so quite the win in the weekend for him. On the other side of things, if you will, for the LPGA Tour, Jin Young Koo capped off a monster season with the CME Group Tour Championship. What were your impressions, your takeaways from what we've seen there?
Yeah, and it's Koo, by the way.
Oh, Koo, sorry. Jin Young Koo.
No problems whatsoever. Just wanted to get that out there. Look, five wins, and she was awesome. I mean, a Sunday 63, she hit 63 consecutive greens in regulation to finish the tournament. Think about that, Luke. You and I play golf, and all we're trying to do is get like one green in regulation for our round. She had 63 consecutive to end the tournament. The longest on the PGA Tour all year is Steve Stricker, who had like 25 or something.
Uh-huh.
It's just ridiculous. One shot win over Nasa Hataoka, who put up the 64. So Jin Young Koo wins the race to a race to the CME Globe, wins the CME Group Championship, wins Rolex Player of the Year over Nelly Korda, who finished his sixth back, also won four times this year, plus the Olympic gold medal that doesn't count in that count. Jin Young Koo, for the second consecutive year, wins the race into the CME Globe and wins this event. What she's doing is remarkable. Luke, she has a wrist injury. She did not hit one golf ball to warm up any day this week. Think about that. Yeah. Imagine if you're a quarterback and you take no practice reps. You're a hitter and you don't go through BP. You're a basketball player and you don't go through warm-ups. And you come out cold in the most pressure-packed situation trying to win the biggest purse in women's golf, and you do it with no practice, and you win impressively going away. It's remarkable what she's done.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, we've seen it in recent weeks in the NFL with quarterbacks coming off of time off, and they haven't looked very good. Rodgers originally, Russell Wilson, some of the other guys throughout the Dak Prescott. Really,
and those are quarterbacks who had the opportunity to have a warm-up on game day.
Yeah, that's true.
She's not doing a warm-up on game day. She's going straight to the first tee.
Right, right. Good point. Yeah, yeah, it's certainly impressive. Speaking of victories, another one, another victor in Colin Morikawa on the European Tour. What were your takeaways from that?
First American to win the race to Dubai. He wins the DP World Championship in Dubai, shooting a Sunday 66 to win by three. What can't Colin do? He wins another major this year. He wins the WGC. Now he wins the European Tour's biggest event. Gave a beautiful speech talking about his grandfather, who he lost earlier this year. What a year for Colin Morikawa. He's got a world of confidence heading into next year. And if he wins Tiger's event, he will move very close to get to overtaking Jon Rahm for number one in the world. It won't be enough, but he will come very close to overtaking Jon Rahm if he can win the Hero World Challenge next week.
What is going on? What happened with Rory McIlroy, where he went Incredible Hulk, or even Hulk Hogan, ripping off the shirt? But I guess this time in frustration. I guess that's kind of like the Incredible Hulk.
He had
what
a really
going on?
Bad Sunday. Shot 74 to brutal break on the back nine when a shot that should have been about 2 feet from the hole hit the flag and rolled the wrong direction off the green into a bunker. He had everything that could go wrong, and took out his emotion by just ripping his shirt. But as Justin Thomas said, I love this. Rory works his butt off and expects highly of himself and is frustrated when it doesn't go well. Never treats people with disrespect, never makes a fool of himself, just plays with fire and passion. That's why he's as successful as he is and one of my favorites. He ripped that shirt in private. Nobody saw it. He stepped out of scoring, and that's why the pictures came out. But he didn't, you know, offend anybody. He didn't hurt anybody. Just him taking out his emotions and his way of doing it.
Yeah, I would say so. The big news over the weekend is we talk golf with Jeremy Schilling, as we do every Wednesday. Find him on Twitter at Jay Schill. He's our resident golf expert, writes for PGA Magazine. The big news over the weekend, you actually sent this to me first, but then I saw it everywhere, and it was, of course, Tiger Woods out there swinging, hitting some golf balls out there. What were your takeaways? What's the latest with Tiger? What should we expect? I think a lot of people were kind of blown away by this video from what we saw over the weekend. I'll just tee you up from that video of Tiger Woods and the progress he's showing. What are your thoughts on all that?
Speechless.
Yeah.
It made me utterly speechless. I said, oh, my God. Those of us who have sources had heard about this for weeks, and we didn't want to trust the sources. It was like, really? 9 months? In 271 days? None of us wanted to trust our sources, even if you believed our sources.
Right.
It's amazing, but please, folks, pump the brakes. DraftKings at last check. Look this up, Luke, if you have a quick chance, or Joe. I think he was 36-1 to win the 2022 Masters. Like, come on, folks, slow down. He's got a long way to go. That TMZ video from last week still shows him limping as he had a doctor's appointment at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles. He's got to be able to walk 72 holes. He's not going to ask for a cart. It's not in Tiger's personality. Why DraftKings is giving him those odds, I have no idea. Please slow down on the Tiger's going to return sometime soon talk. It's great. This is a great step. It's amazing. It's incredible how far he's come, but please slow down.
Yeah, I had saw just the fact that he had I think it was 15-1 odds of just winning any tournament in 2022 you could bet on as well.
Which, what?
Yeah, seems very optimistic. So.
Wait, whoever wrote that? I mean, yeah, it came out on a Sunday morning. Were they still drunk from the night before, whoever put up those odds?
Hey, people are very optimistic. Maybe some wishful thinking, hoping to see him out there competing at a high level very soon.
Yeah, I have the same reaction.
Of course, we've talked about this before, but we have the latest version of the match coming up with Brooks and Bryson. You know, it's something that we had been waiting for with the trash talking. I feel like at this point, it almost, maybe I'm just out of the right circles here, but it feels like almost kind of missed that opportunity. Things have cooled off in recent weeks or months. But we have the
All right.
You could correct me. We have the match
they
coming up.
Brooks Bryson started it up again. They
okay,
did
good.
The same thing. I can't stand this guy. I don't know what's up with him. He's disrespectful. He still hasn't apologized to me. The hug that we did at the Ryder Cup was all for the team. It didn't mean anything. So I sent the stuff to Luke, and I passed it on to Joe because Joe is the wrestling expert around here. And I want Joe's take. Do you think what each of them have said, both in the Monday conference call and leading up to today and leading up to Friday, is genuine? Or is this a pro wrestling gimmick to try to draw ratings and viewers on Friday?
I suspect it's a work. In other words, it's just for show.
From our wrestling expert, he thinks it's all just for show for this week.
That's my fear.
Oh, boy.
That's my fear. And you can see this match live from Vegas, 4 p.m. Eastern time on TNT, simulcast on True TV, TBS, and the Headline News Network, HLN, on Friday. From the Wynn Golf Club, the only golf course in the Strip. They're using 12 of the 18 holes there. I have the same fear, Joe, that a lot of this is scripted, a lot of this is cooked up to try to either sell merchandise and the case of Brooks Koepka to try to get viewers to convince them the day after Thanksgiving to tune in on what will be a very heavy, hectic sports weekend. I'm not convinced this is real either. And frankly, I don't think this is going to be close. Brooks Koepka has been playing some absolutely just atrocious golf this fall. He just signed a new club in Baldia with Trixon and Cleveland Golf. I'm not convinced that Brooks is in the right headspace. Meanwhile, Bryson's debuting new irons, and he's been practicing in quiet. I had a betting outfit send me odds that have Bryson minus 125, Brooks plus 105. Seems about right to me. I think Bryson wins this thing pretty easily.
You're the biggest golf guy I know. We're up against it, but are look, for me, I'm an average golf fan. I honestly couldn't really care less about this. Are you excited for the match five, Bryson and Brooks?
I'm curious. Uh-huh. I'll be intrigued if it starts well. But I do think this did miss its moment, and if it had happened about 6 weeks ago, it would have been better.
Yes, right, which is what I was trying to say off the top in terms of, I think the time has passed a little bit, at least for average golf fans or sports fans wanting to see this. He's on Twitter.
And also, look at the NFL's ratings. I think this is going to get lost in a sports heavy day.
I'm sure. Yeah, for sure. A lot of college football and rivalry weekend this weekend, so a lot going on. He's Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at @jschill. He's our resident golf expert, writes for PGA Magazine. He joins us every Wednesday to talk golf. We'll see what happens with Bryson and Brooks, and then we'll react to anything, break it all down next week as well with Jeremy. Oh, last thing real quick before we let you go. Best food item for Thanksgiving. What would you say?
The best food item is, I believe, the cornbread muffin.
Ooh.
Or the mashed potatoes. Uh-huh. And coming up in late December on the Festivus segment for golf.
Yeah.
I was at MetLife Stadium on Sunday for the Jets, and I have a major beef with the in-stadium entertainment.
Oh, all right. Can't wait to hear it coming up at the next holiday.
And it's not just because we lost the game. This is just inexplicable, the behavior of the in-stadium folks.
Oh, okay. I'm very intrigued. I'm going to have to wait weeks now to find out, but I'm looking forward to
it. I know. It's going to be like the match five. It's going to be
that's right.
Maybe too late by then. Maybe I'll have a different opinion.
Yeah, 6 weeks too late. Yeah, he's on Twitter at Jay Schill, our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, enjoy your Thanksgiving. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Thanks, Luke and Joe.
Yeah, hey, pleasure's all ours. Our resident golf expert joins us every week to talk golf. Yeah, it's not even on the radar, Brooks Bryson. You got so much other stuff going on this week, and I feel like the time to do it was at the heat of this rivalry months ago. I don't think I'll be watching very much of that. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. Been playing music this afternoon for Queen and Kiss, paying tribute to the musicians that passed away on this day 30 years ago. And when we come back, we'll wrap up hour one. It's the Mar Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. How come you're always such a fussy young man? Don't want no Captain Crunch, don't want no Raisin Bran. Well, don't you know that other kids are starving in Japan? So eat it, just eat it. Don't want to argue, I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean off your plate. So
wrapping up hour one here on the Morrow Midday Show as we get ready for Thanksgiving tomorrow. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling talking golf with us. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Jeremy, I should say, joins us every Wednesday to talk golf. The match five coming up. I've made my thoughts very well known on it. I think it's a little overdone at this point, and I think the timing's a little late for this particular matchup. And for me in particular this weekend, I'll be more locked into the football than the golf. But if you're a golf fan, maybe you're looking forward to the match and seeing those two get out there. I know when we had talked about this originally, when it was first announced going back a few months ago, I heard from some golf fans who said, you know, that they are looking forward to it, that they do like these matches, that even now that we've reached number five, it hasn't lost any steam. Me personally, I would tend to disagree. And when it comes to the match five, I'll be watching some of the college football games over it. Right, I'll be paying more attention to the NFL over the next few days than the match five. In fact, I'll be honest with you, I forgot it was even going on this week until Jeremy reminded me prior to coming on this afternoon. As I was riding down the road with a two-horse wagon and a four-horse load. Wrapping up hour one, what do we got here? What's this?
Turkey in the straw.
Oh-ho! Getting ready for Thanksgiving tomorrow. We'll catch up with Paul Charchian next hour. I'll help you get excited, if possible, for the NFL games on Turkey Day tomorrow. And I have to defend some Thanksgiving food takes that were under some heat yesterday after we got off the air. Get to all that coming up. Hour two next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. Well, I came to the river and I couldn't get across, so I paid $5 for an old blind horse. He wouldn't go ahead and he wouldn't stand still. He just went up and down like an old sawmill. Turkey in the straw, turkey in the hay, turkey in the straw.